Nicky's, with Terry's mobile in her tracksuit bottoms. She frequently made off with this phone. Many rows were triggered by her mother demanding it back, and Crystal pretending that she didn't know where it was. Dimly, Crystal hoped that the journalist might know the number somehow and call her directly. She was in a crowded, jangling cafe in the shopping centre, telling Nicky and Leanne all about the journalist when the mobile rang.
Who? Are you the journalist, like? Who is that? Gary? It's Crystal. Who's this? I'm your aunt. Where's Esther? Who?
Shouted Crystal. One finger in the ear, not pressed against the phone, she wove her way between the densely packed tables to reach a quieter place.
Danielle, said the woman, loud and clear on the other end of the telephone. I'm your mum's sister.
Oh, yeah, said Crystal, disappointed.
Fucking snobby bitch, Terry always said when Danielle's name came up. Crystal was not sure that she'd ever met Danielle.
It's about your great-gran.
Who?
Nana Kath,
said Danielle impatiently. Crystal reached the balcony, overlooking the shopping centre forecourt. Reception was strong here. She stopped.
What's wrong with her? Said Crystal.
It felt as though her stomach was flipping over, the way it had done as a little girl, turning somersaults on a railing like the one in front of her. 30 feet below, the crowd surged, carrying plastic bags, pushing buggies and dragging toddlers.
She's in Southwest General. She's been there a week. She's had a stroke.
She's been there a week,
said Crystal, her stomach still swooping.
Nobody told us.
Yeah, well, she can't speak properly, but she said your name twice.
Mine?
Asked Crystal, clutching the mobile tightly.
Yeah, I think she'd like to see you. It's serious. They're saying she might not recover.
What ward is it?
Asked Crystal, her mind buzzing.
12, high dependency. Visiting hours are 12 till 4, 6 till 8. All right, is it? I gotta go. I only want to let you know, in case you want to see her. Bye.
The line went dead. Crystal lowered the mobile from her ear, staring at the screen. She pressed a button repeatedly with her thumb until she saw the word blocked. Her aunt had withheld her number. Crystal walked back to Nicky and Leanne. They knew at once that something was wrong.
Go see her, said Nicky, checking the time on her own mobile. You get there for 2, get the bus.
Yeah,
said Crystal blankly. She thought of fetching her mother, of taking her and Robbie to go and see Nana Kath too, but there had been a huge row a year before, and her mother and Nana Kath had had no contact since. Crystal was sure that Terry would take an immense amount of persuading to go to the hospital, and was not sure that Nana Kath would be happy to see her. It's serious. They're saying she might not recover.
Have you got enough cash?
Said Leanne, rummaging in her pockets as the three of them walked up the road towards the bus stop.
Yeah,
said Crystal, checking.
It's only a quid up the hospital, isn't it?
They had time to share a cigarette before the number 27 arrived. Nicky and Leanne waved her off as though she were going somewhere nice. At the very last moment, Crystal felt scared and wanted to shout, "Come with me." But then the bus pulled away from the curb, and Nicky and Leanne were already turning away, gossiping. The seat was prickly, covered in some old, smelly fabric. The bus trundled onto the road that ran by the precinct and turned right into one of the main thoroughfares that led through all the big-name shops. Fear fluttered inside Crystal's belly like a fetus. She had known that Nana Kath was getting older and frailer, but somehow, vaguely, she had expected her to regenerate, to return to the heyday that had seemed to last so long, for her hair to turn black again, her spine to straighten, and her memory to sharpen like her caustic tongue. She had never thought about Nana Kath dying, always associating her with toughness and invulnerability. If she had considered them at all, Crystal would have thought of the deformity to Nana Kath's chest, and the innumerable wrinkles crisscrossing her face as honourable scars sustained during her successful battle to survive. Nobody close to Crystal had ever died of old age. Death came to the young in her mother's circle, sometimes even before their faces and bodies had become emaciated and ravaged. The body that Crystal had found in the bathroom when she had been 6 had been of a handsome young man,
as white and lovely as a statue. Well, that was how she remembered him. But sometimes she found the memory confusing and doubted it. It was hard to know what to believe. She'd often heard things as a child that adults later contradicted and denied. She could have sworn that Terry had said, "It was your dad." But then much later, she had said, "Don't be so silly, your dad's not dead, he's in Bristol, isn't he?" So Crystal had had to try to reattach herself to the idea of Banger, which was what everybody called the man they said was her father. But always, in the background, there had been Nana Kath. She had escaped foster care because of Nana Kath, ready and waiting in Pagford, a strong, if uncomfortable, safety net. Swearing and furious, she had swooped, equally aggressive to Terry and to the social workers, and taken her equally angry great-granddaughter home. Crystal did not know whether she had loved or hated that little house in Hope Street. It was dingy and it smelt of bleach. It gave you a hemmed-in feeling. At the same time, it was safe, entirely safe. Nana Kath would only let approved individuals in through the door. There were old-fashioned bath cubes in a glass jar on the end of the bath. What if there were other people at Nana Kath's bedside when she got there? She would not recognize half her own family, and the idea that she might come across strangers tied to her by blood scared her. Terry had several half-sisters, products of her father's multiple liaisons, whom even Terry had never met. But Nana Kath tried to keep up with them all, doggedly maintaining contact with the large, disconnected family her sons had produced. Occasionally, over the years, relatives Crystal did not recognize had turned up at Nana Kath's while she was there. Crystal thought that they eyed her askance and said things about her under their voices to Nana Kath. She pretended not to notice and waited for them to leave, so that she could have Nana Kath to herself again. She especially disliked the idea that there were any other children in Nana Kath's life. "Who are they?" Crystal had asked Nana Kath when she was 9, pointing jealously at a framed photograph of 2 boys in Paxton High uniforms on Nana Kath's sideboard.
"Them's 2 of my great-grandsons," said Nana Kath. "That's Dan, and that's Ricky. They're your cousins."
Crystal did not want them as cousins, and she did not want them on Nana Kath's sideboard.
"And who's that?"
she demanded, pointing at a little girl with curly golden hair.
"That's my Michael's little girl, Rhiannon, when she were 5. Beautiful, weren't she? But she went and married some wog," said Nana Kath.
There had never been a photograph of Robbie on Nana Kath's sideboard.
"You don't even know who the father is, do you, you whore? I'm washing my hands of you. I've had enough, Terry. I've had it. You can look after it yourself."
The bus trundled on through town, past all the Sunday afternoon shoppers. When Crystal had been small, Terry had taken her into the centre of Yarville nearly every weekend, forcing her into a pushchair long past the age when Crystal needed it, because it was so much easier to hide nicked stuff with a pushchair. Push it down under the kids' legs, hide it under the bags in the basket under the seat. Sometimes Terry would go on tandem shoplifting trips with the sister she spoke to, Cheryl, who was married to Shane Tully. Cheryl and Terry lived 4 streets away from each other in the fields and petrified the air with their language when they argued, which was frequently. Crystal never knew whether she and her Tully cousins were supposed to be on speaking terms or not, and no longer bothered keeping track. But she spoke to Dane whenever she ran across him. They had shagged once, after splitting a bottle of cider out on the wreck when they were 14. Neither of them had ever mentioned it afterwards. Crystal was hazy on whether or not it was legal, doing your cousin. Something Nicky had said made her think that maybe it wasn't. The bus rolled up the road that led to the main entrance of Southwest General and stopped 20 yards from an enormous, long, rectangular grey and glass building. There were patches of neat grass, a few small trees, and a forest of signposts. Crystal followed 2 old ladies out of the bus and stood with her hands in her tracksuit pockets, looking around. She had already forgotten what kind of ward Danielle had told her Nana Kath was on, and she recalled only the number 12. She approached the nearest signpost with a casual air, squinting at it almost incidentally. It bore line upon line of impenetrable print, with words as long as Crystal's arm and arrows pointing left, right, diagonally. Crystal did not read well. Being confronted with large quantities of words made her feel intimidated and aggressive. After several surreptitious glances at the arrows, she decided that there were no numbers there at all, so she followed the two old ladies towards the double glass doors at the front of the main building.